Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, and I'm joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. And we had originally planned on doing one episode this week because we have a special guest coming on to preview the Tottenham Hotspurs game. But we're going to do that tomorrow, and today we're going to be airing some grievances because I don't know if you watched the game on Sunday, but things have taken a pretty strong turn for the worse at Manchester United. And we wanted to get all of our thoughts on that out of the way before our guest comes in, because I mean, there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
Weird time to have a guest, because like I could not care less about a match ever than this upcoming lame duck Tottenham match.
Yeah. It is, especially, I mean, now, you know, I'm sure we'll have interesting things to talk about, and our, you know, we're grateful for the guests for taking the time tomorrow to talk to us. But I mean, right now, it's hard
right.
to think
no, there's
about
definitely
anything.
Interesting things to talk about, because Tottenham have their own issues, and they've had an up and down season, and they have a manager that they're not thrilled with, despite the fact they just hired him. So there's a lot to get into there. But just from a United standpoint, like, I've never cared less about a match.
Yeah.
Do you remember as a little kid, you would joke that you were going to dig a hole to China? You know, like, that's where the vibes are right now. Like, they're in the Earth's core. That's how low the vibes are.
They're halfway on their way to China.
Yeah.
They found a way. But yeah, we lose 5-0 to Liverpool. And it's not just that we lose 5-0 to Liverpool. It's that we witness probably the most chaotic collapse of Manchester United we've seen, maybe post-Ferguson, of a team that really just couldn't give a shit, being absolutely ripped apart and looking totally directionless against, you know, our biggest rival, who also, I mean, to be fair, is playing like one of the best teams in the world. Mo Salah got a hat trick, looking like one of the best players in the world. But, you know, something that could have been prevented and something that really shouldn't have happened. I mean, three separate incidents of players that probably should have been sent off. One of them was sent off. You know, nobody looking like they have any clue what's going on. And the person to absorb the blame for this, and rightfully so, is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who, you know, we've spent a lot of time on this show defending and saying that he deserves another chance to recover from a really seismic defeat. And we're at a point now where I think all three of us are just kind of out of defenses for him, especially in this specific context, we're out of defenses for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we started at the beginning of the season saying that this was the year that he had to take the step, you know, because we spent last year saying after the 6-1 Tottenham match, it's like, look, like, let's give Ollie some time. I mean, we were saying that before the 6-1 Tottenham match. And this is a team that's finished in second place last year. So this is the issue that we're running into is not just the performance against Liverpool, but the idea that in the greater context, like, the gulf between us and a direct rival for what we all perceived at the beginning of the season was a possible title race. It's just not even close. Like, this team is, it's not even like they took one step back. It just, over the last couple of weeks, it really seems like they've just unlearned or undone every last little bit of, you know, goodness that we've seen ever since Solskjaer was appointed as interim manager back in, you know, December of 2018. I mean, like, they've completely just turned it around in the wrong direction. And that's why it's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I said a week ago after the Leicester game when I was talking to Matt that, you know, this is a time where maybe we're going to have to be patient with Ollie, but he's you know, he's got opportunities in these big games to show that he's capable of fixing the situation. And I'm sitting here a week later, you know, after two games since I said that, kind of thinking the exact opposite. But also, what are we going to do right now if we do sack Ollie? Like,
I don't even want to get to that.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole other Pandora's box to unwrap and everything. And everybody knows I'm the biggest Ollie guy, and it's time to sack him because you proved you're not going to do it. And I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I could not care less about the 5-0 defeat to Liverpool. I don't care that we lost to Liverpool at Old Trafford. I don't care about the embarrassment and everything. That it's not the one result to me. We could have started the season 5-0 and lost 5-0 to Liverpool, and people would have been screaming to sack Ollie.
Yep.
And that would have been ridiculous. So it's not this one result. It is the culmination of a lot of things. And you brought up, all right, so the 6-1 happened last year, and the 6-1 happened for a bunch of different reasons. One, because you had no preseason, a bunch of players that were still figuring things out. Jose Mourinho specifically targeted very weak areas, like Mason Greenwood doesn't track back. We're going to attack down that flank. Eric Bailly is in the game, so we're just going to, you know, force him to play with the ball at his feet. And Anthony Martial got sent off. A lot of things happened there. And what did Solskjaer do? He hunkered down. They went into an international break, and they came back, and they had a terrific performance against Newcastle. Like, yes, they went 1-0 down 30 seconds into the game on an own goal. Okay, Newcastle didn't come close to scoring the rest of the match. Okay, it's Newcastle. Then he went to the Parc des Princes and put on a defensive performance for the ages against PSG. And then the next week, he went they didn't give Chelsea a thing. Unfortunately, you know, he also sacrificed his attack to do that. So it's a 0-0 draw. Then they went to Leipzig, came into town, and they hunkered down and they were very organized defensively, and they didn't give Leipzig a thing. And then the last half hour of the game, he blew it open for a big win. And then they didn't give Arsenal anything at the weekend, but one player makes a mistake, concedes a penalty, and you lose. And then the Istanbul game happened, and everybody was like reacting like, how could you lose to a team this bad? And it's like, these things happen, and it's frustrating because United hadn't scored a goal in ages, but this was a bad result off the back of a string of good performance. It wasn't like United were getting run over in all these matches. They had very much closed up shop defensively and sacrificed a bit of the attack for that. And it's telling that after that Istanbul match, United in the Premier League didn't lose again until the end of January, and they only lost one game until May from that. Like, the foundation was there. And that's the complete opposite to what's happening now, is ever since September has started, the foundation has very much not been there. There were flaws that were apparent against Newcastle, but it was easy to brush them off in a 4-1 win. But they came roaring back a week later against West Ham. And since then, it's just been Everton and Villa. Everybody's been capitalizing on these things. And now it's getting so bad. You went with this 4-3-3 against Villarreal, and it didn't work. And then you come back from the international break and you do it again against Leicester. Like, that's going to solve. And then you change it up against Atalanta. And the funny thing is, against Atalanta, like, United were actually pretty okay. Like, they gave up two chances and Atalanta capitalized on them, and they kept them out of their, like, yeah, they gave up a lot of transitions, but the defense put out the fires pretty well and didn't let them turn into shots and big opportunities. But all the warning signs were there. Like, everybody at this point has heard Paul Scholes' commentary on it, and how he said, I just watched that game and all I could think about was Sunday. And if you do this against Liverpool, you're going to be 3 or 4 nil down at halftime. And Ollie somehow looked at the team and said, I'm going to put the exact same players out against Liverpool. And it was like,
yeah,
what?
The midweek game was like the canary in the coal mine.
It was just like, what? This is like I said, I watched that Leicester match laughing with my friend being like, there's like pointing it out on the TV, like, look at what we're doing. There's no chance we're going to win this match. And that's why the Liverpool match didn't sting, because as soon as I saw that team and I was like, what are we trying to do here? Nothing about this makes sense. If we're trying to actually go out there and play with Liverpool, like, you can't do that with McTominay and Fred in midfield. You're flanking Ronaldo, a striker who needs service, with two players whose number one instinct is to cut inside and shoot. If you want to sit back, drop back and hunker down and then hit and try to hit them on the counter, well, you've got Ronaldo out there, so that's going to be difficult. You've got Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford, who are very much not defensive forwards, who don't put in that kind of work. So that's not going to really help. Like, everything about this game was so predictable. Like, somehow we, and that's what it comes down to, is like you said, Colin, like, I was sitting there being like, we have to be patient with Solskjaer. You don't get that right anymore, to be patient when there is so obviously a problem and you got an international break to look at it. And historically, when you give Solskjaer like a week or so, an international break, he comes out of it really strongly.
He goes into a big game where he knows the focus is going to be on him. I mean, I think that was the biggest surprise for me, was I was expecting Liverpool, that match, to maybe be like 0-0 or 1-1. I was expecting us to be extremely conservative. And I mean, we talked in the Slack about how Ronaldo and Greenwood has been frustrating and not really working as a pair. And seems like we've been going in the opposite direction of what we saw from Greenwood at the start of the season. And we keep coming back to this Ronaldo thing as being kind of like the crux of the problem. But at this point, you kind of have to look at it for what it is and realize that Ronaldo is a part of the squad, and that's not going to change. And if Solskjaer is not the guy to figure it out, then sorry.
Right. And I think that's going to cause problems for every manager that comes in, because he is causing issues. And the thing is, okay, like, you know what he's going to do and what he's not going to do, so you can coach around that. And he's just not. And that's what's Mason Greenwood hasn't had a good game since Ronaldo arrived. And it's like, all right, player, you brush off the first few of them, but now it's been a month. And yet he's still running him out there. And Mason Greenwood has been terrible defensively too. And he hasn't been in position, and he doesn't know how to press. And like, when he runs at defenders, he's not cutting off any angles. He's just running at them. And it's either you're not teaching him how to do this right, or he's not listening to you, because he's never done this for 3 years. And regardless of what the answer is, it doesn't bode well on the manager. And look, it's not entirely Mason Greenwood's fault. He's not a right winger, and he is certainly not a good enough right winger that he should be starting for a Manchester United week in, week out. He just is. Which, last year, like, okay. And last year, that was part of the reason why United were frustrating in some matches, because there were some matches where Mason Greenwood as a winger just didn't offer you anything. But you've got other options this year, and you're not using them. It boggles the mind. Like I was saying before, like, Solskjaer comes out of these breaks in his first year, coming out with a back three and saying, we're going to use wingbacks and press Alexander Arnold and Robertson high up the pitch. And he got a result out of that. Like, and he had a plan. And then, he kept coming out of these international breaks. He went on that winter break and came out with a plan when they returned from that to beat Chelsea. And then Project Restart, he came out of that playing a completely different way. And we already talked about the beginning of last season. He came out and beat a PSG and all these different things. He's good when you give him the break to. So it's like, you have a September happened, which was a near disaster, because October is proven to be a bigger one. And you take that international break and you say, all right, we've got 2 weeks now to meet with the coaches, look over what's happened, see what the problem is, figure out what the problem is, figure out how we're going to fix it and come up with a plan. And he just hasn't done that. And in the slightest, he came back out there and ran out the same tactics against Leicester as he did against Villarreal to predictable results. And the same thing happened at Atalanta and Liverpool. Like, you no longer get the benefit of the doubt that you're going to fix this.
Yeah. And it's all of that tension, I guess, has been heightened by the last couple of days of reports, you know, leaking out of the locker room of, you know, players unhappy about their position in regards to Solskjaer, players unhappy about Solskjaer's tactical decisions in the last few matches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All signs are really pointing towards Solskjaer's on the way out, but the club have not acted yet.
I don't blame the players in any way, shape, or form of this because we never got these reports. Solskjaer's had his back against the wall before, but we've never ever got these reports before. And people always tried to bend it. Like the Istanbul game happens and they're like, I think Solskjaer's has hit his ceiling. He can't get the team any further than this. And it's like, there is no proof to that statement other than they lost a game when he rotated the team heavily and a couple guys made some bad mistakes and they couldn't create anything. All right. So, and you know, anybody who sat there and said, there's no structure to this United team. It's like, yeah, there is, it's very plain to see. And that's the whole knock against Solskjaer has always been, yes, he can set up his team to play in these big games and hit you on the counter and be very organized. The issue is when he plays against the smaller teams and they have to have all of the ball. So to say that there's no structure or that United need a guy who could organize the team, they have one. He is just actively choosing not to do it right now. But when in previous times when people would just say, oh, yeah, like he's hit his ceiling. It's like, no, you just don't like him. Like there's no because all when you said he hit his ceiling with this team and he's not going to get the best out of these players anymore. He didn't have strikers that scored goals last year, and he still finished second in the league in goals and finished in second place. He still took that team way further than really anybody could think, considering that they didn't sign anyone new in the summer. Edinson Cavani had the most starts out of all the new signings, and he started 13 league games. And in a way, Solskjaer's a victim of his own success there in that you now finish second and suddenly we're expecting a title challenge, or at least to be in the mix there on a team that was very much not ready to do that, especially if they didn't upgrade the midfield, which they didn't. And then you went and signed Ronaldo, and that was people labeled that as the missing piece, which was like, hey, cool. How is a guy going to score goals if you can't get him the ball in the box? Because United can't do that. Predictably, all this has happened, but like you would think going into the international break, if there's one guy that'll be like, oh, well, I can organize this team to set up and play on the counterattack, it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And he just hasn't done that at all. And I can understand the players' frustrations, especially when you're sitting there and being like, well, that guy's playing terribly every game and you still keep picking him. Like Jadon Sancho, you spent $77 million on him. You've been going after him for 2 years. You finally got him. And now you're not using him. And I don't care about the left wing thing. Like he played left wing at Borussia Dortmund all the time. And that's his preference. That's Sancho's preference to play on the left, but he can play on the right. But now Rashford's back and you're still not playing Sancho because Mason Greenwood, who has been not doing anything for a month, is suddenly undroppable. Like how has everybody just become undroppable? You're bringing in these guys and you're just not using them. Yeah. I don't blame the players for being like your team selections are odd, especially when you got run off the pitch against Atlanta and you threw out the same team there. The last thing I want to say is, there was reports came out after the Atalanta match about how Solskjaer went out and said, oh, we had planned on resting Pogba in this game. We told him that before the Leicester match. And that's fine. He has done that plenty of times before. And Solskjaer typically has a plan and does this a lot. Well, we have this game coming up, so you're going to play today and you're not going to play then. Which was fine. It's good that it wasn't in reaction to Paul Pogba's comments, which were true, after the Leicester match. You plan on doing this. But Pogba was really like the only player that lost his place after the Leicester match, after Solskjaer went out there and said we had too many guys just walking around not trying hard enough. And then you go out there and say basically the only guy who got dropped, because obviously Matic is going to get dropped too because he can't play twice a week. But you're basically saying the only guy who got dropped is the one that we planned on dropping, before the match, that's not a good look at all. That's the problem. If you're going to go out there and say, oh, this was unacceptable, we have too many guys walking around, and then you don't drop anyone, and then you don't start Pogba against Liverpool, and it's like, well, then why'd you rest him against Atalanta? So now it's you're even casting stories and, you know, you're casting doubt on your own story. So, yeah, I don't blame the players for suddenly not having a clue about this, because up until this season, it was pretty obvious why guys were getting picked and why guys other guys weren't. And now it's not.
Well, Pogba's got an opportunity to get plenty of rest now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does.
I think the other side of this, too, because we've seen a lot of, like, Gary Neville and then Jan Aga, the Norwegian football writer, have been staunch defenders on Twitter of Solskjaer the last couple days, pointing blame at the players. I think another flip side of that in defense of the players here is, you know, what have they been doing the last 2 years when Solskjaer does come under fire? They're the ones that stick their neck out for him, and they go out and they put out a good performance and they try really hard, especially, you know, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, players that Solskjaer has put trust in. They're players that haven't give, you know, that never really gave up on Solskjaer, and they wanted him to still be the manager. There's just only so many times.
Every time people said he's lost the team, they've come out with a performance the next day to show that he hasn't. And that changed on Sunday.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that they need to play better, but when it comes to a lack of direction and planning and no adjustment and, you know, relying on the same 11 that just isn't working, it goes beyond the players at that point. And there's just no defense for that.
Right. And look, people in the media don't call out their friends. They don't bash their friends. That's just the way it works. That works. It works like that in every sport. And if you're going to sit here and tell me that media people are going to be are supposed to be impartial, yes, they are. But nobody bashes their friends. You won't make it a long way in the media world if you bash your friends. Like, the reason that Fabrizio is the first one to break every story is because Fabrizio has a lot of information that he doesn't report, because it might make a client look bad or paint somebody in a bad light, and their agent does not want that getting out, so he won't report it. And in return, when something happens, the agent calls Fabrizio first. That's just how the journalism world works. Roy Keane never blames Ole Solskjaer. He's very good friends with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And Gary Neville, there's been a lot made out of Neville this week because he's very adamantly not calling for Solskjaer's job. In the last 2 weeks, Gary Neville has gone on various different publications and talked about all the things that are wrong with that are going wrong with United, what the problems are, how, like, these are problems and they need to be fixed. And he has criticized Solskjaer and said he needs to fix them. And he's not. He isn't calling for his job. Gary Neville does not call for people's jobs. I'm like, that's fine. He didn't call for Mourinho's job. When things fell off the floor with Mourinho, Gary Neville was sitting there being like, well, they didn't back him. So, like, what do you expect him to do? Like, they need to get behind this manager. He has won the Champions League. He's won all these things. And it was like, Gary, it's very clear Mourinho's lost the team. Gary has spoken about all the issues at United. He's not painting it like it's roses and like we're all just overblowing things. He's very much pointed out the things. Like, so what? He doesn't call for the manager to lose his job? Like, you can't get mad at him for that when he's been consistent about that on everything. Listen to his criticism. Don't listen to the part where he's like, oh, but they shouldn't fire him.
Nathan, any thoughts? I know we've been talking for a while.
Well, I mean, I think my one critique for Neville, and I think it would save him a lot of, well, maybe a little bit of crap on the internet, is just by saying, like, guys, I was a teammate with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for X amount of years. We're still friends. We still run in the same circles because Manchester United has alumni events all the time. Like, I'm going to recuse myself from saying whether or not my friend should be fired from his dream job. Like, all he has to do is say that, and I think
he did say that last week.
He did say that? All right. Well, that's positive at least. But I mean, I don't understand why it's just there are people on Twitter who just aren't in that position. Like, you know, if Polly started writing bad stuff, like, I'm not going to go out on Twitter and be like, you know, Colin needs to get rid of Polly. Like, I mean, like, we're friends. Like, I'm not, if Polly all of a sudden just forgot tactics, I'm not going to sit here and blow a spot up on Twitter or on the podcast, because at the end of the day, like, you know, that's kind of what friendships are based around. It's like that trust that you got each other's backs. And I mean, look at the social media, Manchester United's social media. Like, at any given time, they are constantly maybe more so pre-pandemic, they're constantly holding events where, you know, all of these famous players from all the great teams of Sir Alex Ferguson's are all getting together in tuxedos, and they're sitting there and having dinners and having banquets and stuff. Like, they run in the same circles constantly. Like, you're not going to blow up your boy spot for, you know, so that way you can have five extra minutes of perceived credibility from people whose avatars on Twitter are footballers, you know, to then make the rest of your life uncomfortable with this person that you're going to run in the same circles with until you die, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
that's my thing. I'm Gary.
One thing that Neville said too is like, I'm not going to call for somebody who literally won us the Champions League to be fired. And like, I understand not wanting, I would never go on and say that my friend should lose their job, even if I knew they were doing a bad job and I knew that the writing was on the wall. I just wouldn't do that because, you know, people don't want to do that to their friends. This is going an extra step for Gary Neville by like using this sort of Man United nostalgia logic, because I think something that is really unfair to Solskjaer is people who combine his managerial and his player legacy. Whereas the reality is, no matter what Solskjaer did as manager, he will always have scored that goal in 1999. He will always have had that player legacy, and nothing is going to change that. His managerial legacy needs to be viewed in a different framework, because it's just not healthy to combine the two. And it doesn't allow people like Neville, who have a massive audience, to be impartial.
Yeah. Well, and then on top of that too, when you're separating the things, like, I know people are upset in this moment, but hopefully when you can take a 10,000 foot view to this thing in a year or 2 years or however amount of time it takes, like, at the end of the day, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has not been a horrible manager for Manchester United. Like, he hasn't come in and like set the place on fire. You know, he was originally supposed to be a caretaker manager, and the players responded to the stuff that he was selling on the training pitch and in the dressing room, and he was elevated to a full-time position. You know, to a certain degree, that's on the club leadership for not vetting your full-time manager better, because I think at the end of the day, we could have let him ride off into the sunset as the caretaker manager and brought in who was going to be the heir apparent, whether it be Mauricio Pochettino or whoever the hell they were looking at back in, you know, 2018-19. But like, at the end of the day, they brought in Solskjaer, and Solskjaer hasn't done anything that has made this club particularly disreputable. He hasn't done anything that's made it appear as though the team is really just like on its way to relegation or anything like that. Like, at the end of the day, I think he's run a pretty good ship, and it's going up in flames quite spectacularly right now, which is upsetting, because at the end of the day, we have for the last 3 years talked about how much we liked Ole and we wanted to see him succeed. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to have a couple people who are going to be shitheads, and they're going to be like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the worst manager that we've ever had, you know, since ex-manager or just in general, which I think is unfair, because I think at the end of the day, he has been a good manager. He has been, at the very least, an incredibly successful stopgap manager. Because when Mourinho got fired, did we anticipate that we were going to have some of the finishes that we had and that we were going to make Europa League finals. I mean, I know based on the Manchester United lore and the expectation of where this club is supposed to be versus where it is, it hasn't been good enough. But if you separate that part out and you go post 2013, what is Manchester United? These are some of the best years that we have had since Sir Alex Ferguson left. And, you know, we made the Star – well, I made the Star Wars comparison on our Slack channel, and Suede kind of jumped all over it. I think there needs to be – and I've seen a couple people tweet this out today too, so this is not necessarily my total original thought. I think there needs to be a little bit more of a separation now. Like, United has been trying to chase the past – for much too long. And it really came to a head with the re-signing of Cristiano Ronaldo. And seeing reports that Sir Alex Ferguson showed up to Carrington today to, like, back Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is – it's actually kind of, it's really frustrating for me to see both as an Ole fan and a Sir Alex fan, because it feels like, you know, my dad showing up to the principal's office to like – you know, say that I'm an all right kid or something like that. It doesn't ever feel like Ollie's been treated like his own man either. He's always been the pick by Alex, whether it's Sir Alex or whether it's like either as a puppet or just like he was going to be the heir apparent to Sir Alex Ferguson. We've got to separate and start figuring out what the real new era post Sir Alex Ferguson is going to look like.
Yeah, there's got to be both building off and continuity in some sense of, you know, establishing direction.
Which,
because we can't waste the good work that he did, because then it really was all for nothing.
And that's what worries me, because you can't rely on this club. We're seeing how this club is handling this situation, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should have been sacked, and they're just not. We're just setting up this lame duck match against Tottenham on Saturday.
As they figure out a list of replacements or whatever.
Right, or some shit. Yeah. Like
all four
it
of
is,
them.
It is 6:14 p.m. on Tuesday, and he has not been fired.
I've received notifications.
But like what Nathan said about these years have been falling. Like, my fear is that in 2 or 3 years, we're looking back on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer years and be like, we didn't know how good we had it. And the grass is not always greener. And here's the bottom line. Like, and this is what I wrote about today. Like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did a fantastic job the last 2 years.
He punched above his weight for the last X amount of years.
Right. He stripped the team down to a bare-bones squad to the point that he literally had to play Rashford and Martial and his whole, like, basically his entire starting 11 in all competitions. Like, in the League Cup against Colchester, we didn't have players to feel like we had to play 60 minutes of Rashford because we didn't have anybody else. Like, he could have said, I'm not trying to win this competition, but he said, no, we're Manchester United. We try to win every competition. So I'm not going to throw Tahith Chong out there so that Colchester United could beat us. Like, we are trying to win. That was the squad that he operated at. He operated with the core, the spine of his team up the middle. For half that season was McTominay, Fred, and Andreas Pereira. That is so bad. And he had that team in fifth place before Bruno Fernandes came along, when both Rashford and Martial spent extended chunks on the sideline and Paul Pogba was totally out of the picture. And then when people say, oh, I think a better manager gets more out of this squad, like, I don't think you realize how bad Pereira, Fred, McTominay are. And how much Ole was getting out of this squad. And then the season ends and United don't give him any first team players. They don't upgrade his starting 11 at all. And the depth that they gave him isn't really much depth. Donny van de Beek doesn't really fit in. So Bruno can never get rested. Rashford can never sit down. And he takes the same squad where everybody knows the limitations that they have and spends an entire season with putting up smoke and mirrors to not only get them second place and increase their points total, despite not adding anybody to that starting 11. And people are still like, oh, I think a better manager can get more out of these players. And I think that's kind of where Ole is too, is we want to play more expansive attacking football. And he opens things up and it's like, oh, shocker, you're not good enough to do this. And the counter argument is that everybody says is, oh, well, like you look at Chelsea and how Jorginho and Conte looked washed up before Tuchel arrived. Like they looked washed up under Frank Lampard and then Tuchel came in and suddenly they're good again. It's like, yeah, they were good before Lampard got there. Jorginho and N'Golo Kanté were two very good players, and then Lampard came and they were less good, and Tuchel came and said, I'm going to put you in this system where we're going to emphasize the...
Oh, Lampard was playing Kanté out of place a lot of the time, too.
And it was like, hey, and asking Jorginho to cover a lot of space, and Tuchel came in and said, Jorginho, we're not going to ask you to defend a lot. I forget who used the analogy of, like, it's like asking somebody to defend a restaurant versus defend a table at a restaurant. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, the thing that you're not good at, we're asking you to do less of that. And the things that you're
good at. Also, that was Fred on Sunday.
Right. So that's the thing is, you could bring in a Thomas Tuchel right now, but like, they're still McTominay and Fred. They still can't pass. They still can't do a lot of things. The manager who says, oh, McTominay, I'm going to put you in a position where we're not going to ask you to do the things you're not good at, and we're going to really simplify this and ask you to just do the things you are good at, is his international manager who plays him at center back. Because he can't get into the Scotland midfield, which is filled with a bunch of players who can't get into the midfields of the top six in the Premier League. And he can't get into that midfield.
Well, John McGinn.
Yeah, as I said, it's John McGinn erasure.
Right. Well, John McGinn is good.
What's he doing?
So people bring up like Jordan Henderson and how like, oh, because he knows exactly what he has to do under Klopp and like the system is, it's like Jordan Henderson was really good before Jurgen Klopp came around. He was misused by Brendan Rodgers. He played him out wide on the right, but like as a technical footballer, he was already really good. He could do a lot more things than McTominay or Fred could do. And then Klopp said, yeah, but we're like, it's useless to play you out on the right over there. We're going to bring you back to the middle. And when he plays for England, whether it was Southgate or before or under Hodgson, he was also really good. Like he just happens to be a really good player. And yes, he plays within a system where he knows exactly what his role is and what to do. But he also knows when I go and do this, Mo Salah is going to go and do that. And Virgil van Dijk is going to do something else. And that part does not exist at United. And that hangs a lot of people out to dry. And a better coach will come in and fix that part. But you put McTominay or Fred like into Liverpool's midfield and things fall apart because they just can't play with the ball at their feet the way that Keita or Fabinho or Henderson or Curtis Jones can. So like somehow Ali got that squad second place. Like he did an absolutely incredible job that I don't think will ever fully be appreciated. The last 2 years, and he managed them in a specific way, and he is not managing in any way, shape, or form the same way this season as those. Like this is not the same manager that we're looking at, and this manager that we're currently watching is very, very plainly not good enough.
Said it all, man.
The juice has been squeezed out of the fruit, man.
The juice is loose.
Oh man.
I think that.
How do you think OJ would be as a holding?
Do you think the succession plan is settled? No, we can't ask that because there is none.
I mean,
Greg.
So these four names that we keep getting updates about. I mean, it's Conte, Antonio Conte, Erik ten Hag, Zinedine Zidane, and Brendan Rodgers, basically.
Okay, so Rodgers already eliminated himself because he thinks he's getting the City job when Pep leaves. So
right.
Fine.
Also, and
Liverpool manager, fine. Go away. We don't want.
Does that mean that we can get Pep?
Has eliminated himself because he's got no interest in this, and he wants the France job, which he's going to get after the next World Cup. Ten Hag, why would you leave Ajax in the middle of the season? To come to a team and what you're going to teach them Ajax football in the middle of the season with a bunch of players who can't play that way. But Donny van de Beek, who was not an essential part of your team at Ajax, is here.
I mean, hey, Donnie and Frankie De Jong recently got a new agent who is the same person. So,
I mean,
maybe we can bring in a midfielder that actually can be. Yeah. But yeah, there was that report that was like Van de Beek's leaving in January.
Just Conte and his people are like desperately throwing his name out there into the media. Like, it's getting sad now. Yeah. But also, like, they're using Fabrizio as like who's just becoming a tabloid gossip person, like saying that he dreams of the United job. Like, oh, get out of here.
I think, well, and
it's like
I
a transfer link.
Yeah, Conte's really pushing for it because it's like, I mean, he's still a great manager, but I don't know how many people are bending over backwards to bring him in.
He's a really good coach, but yeah, that's the thing, is he falls out everywhere.
Because people are looking at him, and certainly United, like, the antennas need to be up, because it's like, we just did this with Mourinho.
Exactly.
Mourinho, it was a meme that Mourinho's got 3 years, and sure as shit, on schedule, flamed out at United. So why would you bring in another guy, Conte, who has an expiration date that you can set your watch to?
Someone posted it as a meme. They posted it as a meme. Like, why wouldn't you bring this guy in? And it's a clip of a press conference where Conte says, I am a serial winner. Like, he calls it, and I'm like, this is the special one press conference. It's the same. And you know what? You know, first of all, serial winner, like, he wins leagues everywhere, and that's a testament to him. That
how much money
although he did do it at Juventus, where, you know, they win the league every year for 9 years. But I will give him this. He was the first one to do it at Juventus, and he ended that run with Inter. He wins leagues everywhere. He doesn't win in the Cups. And, like, if you think his record in the Champions League is just as bad as Ollie's is. So, like, if you're bringing him in to be, like, to try to do the Chelsea and be like, well, we could hire our Tuchel and not have a great season, but win the Champions League. Like, Antonio Conte, not the guy to do that. But most important, like, if you have to go to the media and, like, tell them, like, oh, it's not me, I'm a serial winner, like, I don't want you at Manchester United. Like, you're not the right fit here. And he butts heads with everybody. He flames out. And I'm not denying that he's a good coach. And, like, would we compete? Would we finish top four this year with Conte? Probably. Would we have a good chance at winning the FA Cup? Maybe. He has won the FA Cup. He's made two FA Cup finals, and he has won one.
It's not going to be fun, though.
It won't be fun, but more importantly, it's what comes next. What kind of aftermath did he leave? Because here's this. I just described it like this so many days. I do not want to win this year. I want to win this year, and I want to win next year, and I want to win the year after that. And I want someone that can win this year while also being able to win next year and also being able to win after that. Antonio Conte will be here for 1 or 2 years, and maybe he wins, but he knows after that I'm not here anymore, and he does not care if United win after that. And it doesn't matter if he makes it hard. He will win at the expense of the next guy. So, like, I don't want that. And we don't have the hierarchy and the structure to go to bring in guys with similar routines where we can, like, be like, oh, Conte, you left. All right, let's just bring in a new guy to pick up right where you left off. Like, as you are seeing this week, it's a effing disaster.
There was one of the, like, many Twitter accounts that is like analytics in Manchester United. I don't want to name them because I'm being critical of them, but they're not a fan of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and they were tweeting about Antonio Conte coming in. They're like, yeah, Wan-Bissaka definitely would not be a part of it. And my thought was, well, that's you on board then. It's like, a lot of people see Conte as an option of come in and give the squad direction and tactical planning. And while that is one of our big needs right now, I don't think that's something that we should, like, cut corners on, which is what I see Conte as.
The alternative is Diogo Dalot, and every time Diogo Dalot plays, you're like, oh, right, he's really, really bad.
Oh, that's why he's on the
And people, I mean, there were people that were saying, like, oh, Wan-Bissaka was terrible against Liverpool, and I'm like, he stood out really impressively because United could not have isolated him any more than they did, and he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, Liverpool didn't go down that side.
I mean, And
but yeah, they,
well, he took care of the mess because Mason Greenwood was providing him with zero help. Like, they literally won Bisaka Island over there, and he did a fairly good job. Yeah, he couldn't play on the ball, and he never has been able to, and that, I think, boils down to his own attitude. So that is a problem going forward. But, like, yeah, if Antonio Conte came in this, like, right now, like, Juan Bisaka is still on the team.
I think in general right now, there is not a good answer for who is going to take over Manchester United on October 26th when we're in three competitions and things don't look super great. But at the on the flip side of it, based on at least, you know, on the information that us as stupid bloggers and podcasters have access to, like, I think for one, Ollie's sake, I think it would be best if, you know, he is released from his contract. I'd still like him to get paid because, you know what, poo on you, Glazers, for signing him to that extension when you didn't have to. This has been there again. That's another possibly another podcast. Just the timeline of the comedy of errors that has led us to this point and like how we've managed to find new ways to exacerbate how badly this would get. So it's like, yeah, I don't know that you're not going to find your long-term manager on October 26th right now. Like, that ship sailed. But Ollie probably cannot stay for the sake of making sure that the players don't completely check out. And from a cynical point of view, making sure that the shareholders don't check out. Because if we go and lay an egg against Tottenham, I mean, it's going to be open season. And, you know, you're talking fan protests. We saw what happened with that last year. Some of the more, you know, careless Manchester United fans might do some more reckless things that we would prefer not to see, probably. So at that point, I mean, can we get lucky enough to find another Ollie to steer the ship to May while this team actually rolls up its sleeves and figures out who's going to be the proper successor and brings them in before that transfer window opens? And they can start figuring out how to put things together. Because it really still does feel like this squad is like 75 to 80% of the way there. And there's just the key pieces that still have to be fixed. Like we said that all summer, it was bring in a midfielder that makes sense. Make it make sense. You know, bring in somebody to challenge Aaron Wan-Bissaka. It just bring in some depth in key areas. Allow players like a Jadon Sancho to start flourishing, put them in a position to do the things that you spent £75 million for. And, you know, it's a fixable situation. It looks real bad right now, but I think when you remove yourself from the emotion that you feel about losing 5-0 to Liverpool, like this is fixable. I just don't think you can get the person who's going to fix it on October 26th. I think that is somebody you have to start courting now, and maybe you're announcing him in March or April and saying, this is going to be our guy.
Yeah, I actually...
It's fixable. It's fixable, but more than one players will need to be dropped to fix it, and United fans are not going to like who some of those players are.
Cristiano Ronaldo needs to be benched. He sucks.
It goes beyond him, though. It's beyond him. Like, it's not just him. Well, there's others.
I wanted to say that.
There are others that need to be that if especially if it's Antonio Conte that comes in, there are others that are going to have to be dropped to make way for the way that Conte is going to want to play. And United fans are not going to have going to really like that. And let's be honest, like, if you can't help Antonio Conte today, he's not going to play you.
Nope. So one manager that I forgot to mention that was linked via Laurie Whitwell, who has reliable sources and is, you know, a good journalist, basically saying that United, if they're going to be
patient, I know where you're going with this, and it's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, are thinking about Graham Potter.
That's a good one. I'm fine with that. But that's not happening till the end of the season.
No, that's basically what he said was like, if United are going to hunker down with this and let Ollie kind of see things out a little bit, they want to begin possible courtship with Graham Potter to bring him in the summer? Who did you have in mind as like a bad option?
I also saw that I think it was Laurie said that they're kind of just monitoring the situation at PSG because things don't look great.
Yeah, Pochettino.
And it's like we've said this before, like those are very similar managers. And if Pochettino doesn't, first of all, if he gets sacked at PSG, then the notion, like the argument against Ollie was always like, well, he's never won anything. Like, what's he have on his CV? And like, Pochettino went to PSG and didn't win.
As Neymar at PSG. Neymar at PSG. He's got Mbappe. Messi now. Yeah.
He showed up there with over half the season left, down by a point, and he did not win. He won a cup. Kudos. Good. You're the best team in France by a mile.
It wasn't even the Coupe de France. It was the Coupe de la Ligue.
From the League Cup. And if he doesn't survive at PSG, it's because he can't figure out how to make it work with an aging superstar who doesn't play defense when his whole thing is that he is a high-pressing, ultra-intense manager, and you're going to bring him in to United where it's the same situation? Like, you think he's going to work then? It's like, that's just a hilarious one. Like, I'm sorry. Like, and I've also, we could talk to our Tottenham guest about this, but like, I have friends that are Tottenham fans that have basically been like, we're all monitoring the situation at PSG because we would be interested in bringing him back. And I'm like, you know, Pochettino would be an idiot if Pochettino got sacked today and Spurs and United were both going to fire their manager to hire him. Pochettino would be an idiot to choose United over Spurs. And that's with Harry Kane walking out the door.
Yeah. I mean, look at who was the Tottenham manager that was able to make things work without Harry Kane for a pretty long period of time. I mean, it wasn't one season, but like, you know, they got to a Champions League final. Anyway, this podcast probably should have ended like 15 minutes ago.
Our nature. I feel like I made some good points in the back half of this thing.
Yeah. We haven't mentioned the U.S. men's national team or Marvel yet.
The front half, if you just spoke up.
Well, you said before the podcast started, you said that you had a rant coming, and I was like, Polly, I am here as the point guard, or I guess in this case, the shooting guard, because Colin's the point guard. I'm here to facilitate. I'm clearing the lane so you can go in, bro. Like,
you're Eric Gordon. You're going to let James Harden do his thing.
All right. Well, reference. We're good now. We could sign off.
Yeah, I'm here to provide vibe checks and whatnot. So I am impressed that we got through a whole next manager conversation without mentioning Wayne Rooney.
Look, I mean,
by the way, Wayne, stay away, dog. Please do not come.
I mean, have you seen the club he's at right now?
Your legacy.
Look, if we're going to pick a manager with hair plugs, I would prefer Wayne Rooney over Conte. But there are other options. Wayne, keep us in your mind for the future. But right now, you got your hands full with Derby. So, yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll end it here. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow.
Go watch Dune. The movie's sick.